All right, we have the thumbs up. Good morning, everybody. I feel like we're a small crowd this morning. 8:30, pretty early over here to start things. I hope that's, it's just early in the morning. I feel like we could all move up, get in a little circle here and talk about Windows to Go, but thank you for coming. I love talking about this subject. I'm lucky that Windows to Go is one of them that I get to talk about. It's typically exciting for our executive briefing centers. Any discussion that we've had on Windows 8 since early in 2012 through now, Windows to Go from an enterprise perspective is an exciting capability that we bring to the table. So could I just say, quick show of hands, how many people are pretty familiar or have an understanding, you think, of what Windows to Go is in the room? And if you could leave them up for a second and just put them down, how many people have tried a Windows to Go drive? Okay. Anybody deploying more widely, 10, 15 in your enterprise at this point? Okay, so just a couple here. Can anybody tell me really quickly in just like 30 seconds, maybe a show of hands, what is Windows to Go? Anybody want to brave that one? Okay, so we'll come over here really quickly. I said this was the first hand that I saw go up here. So Windows to Go, just really quickly.
Just Windows on a stick.
Okay. Windows on a stick, so absolutely. Windows running on a USB drive. So everything that we need to boot from is on that standard USB drive. There was a lot of work that went into that to make it work appropriately here. So let's go through a couple objectives here, some of the things that we want to talk about as we get through the presentation. Really, there's three key takeaways that I hope we have as we get away from here. The first one is we want to really go a little bit deeper into some of the scenarios and the deployment capabilities, what we would suggest how to deploy Windows to Go across some of these scenarios. The other piece is understanding the key differences between Windows and Windows to Go and how it works. And as we move into really one of the updates we'll share with Windows 8.1, they've become even better. So it really has started to become just Windows booting from a USB drive. And then finally here, provide some guidance on deployment options and the capabilities. I won't spend a lot of time on a couple of these setup slides, but why did we look at Windows to Go? Quite a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, Windows planning, when they were thinking about Windows 8, they were thinking a little bit ahead, thinking about BYOD and some other scenarios that are tough to do today. As the workforce gets more mobile, how do we support some of the scenarios that we're seeing? And a bootable USB drive that was supported by Microsoft fixed a lot of the items that if we would have done this on our own, such as boot compatibility, drivers, those types of things, is a very nice solution. Now, if we think about how it works in general, in the 5 seconds, it's Windows booting from a USB drive. That's not typically how we boot a PC. The operating system, the drivers, everything required is typically on the hard drive of the PC, and when we boot up, we boot into that operating system. What we've done is we've removed all that, so now we're not booting from the hard drive, but we can provision Windows on one of these certified USBs, and we'll talk about the certified USB, why is this important, in a little while. We put it into the machine and we boot. We can do this at work. We can also roam. And that's really the beauty of the capability, is that from any machine that's supported, I could plug in my Windows to Go drive and boot into my corporate image with my group policies, with direct access, BitLocker encrypted, all the things that we do on our PCs today that we provide to our end users, I could do from this USB drive. Some benefits there, obviously, we just talked about as we go through. So I'd like to demo the user experience of this for some of those who haven't tried it so far. So I'm going to switch over machines here. And I have to get to the correct one. So the machine that I have right here is a Lenovo X1. And what I have showing up on the screen is the internal hard drive of this machine itself. And you'll see it's what? it's about 150 gigabytes is the size of that. Now, the reason I like to show that first is because when I plug in my USB drive, there's some typical behavior that happens when you plug a USB into a machine. So I'm going to plug this into my USB port on the side. What typically happens if I plug in a USB into my machine, what do we typically see? Yep, I kind of hear it popping up here. It pops up. It would mount as the next drive there. It would show as the D drive. But I'm plugged into my machine, and you notice that my Windows to Go drive does not mount. By default, when we provision these drives, we make it so it will not show online on a machine when plugged in. A security reason for that, so that we can't access that drive back and forth until I boot into it. So the only thing showing right now is the local hard drive. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to power down this machine. So I'll simply move over, power it down, shut it down. Once it shuts down all the way, I will boot it back up. And there's a couple different ways we'll talk about getting a machine to boot from USB. Looks like it's finally powering down here. So we'll start it back up. Windows 7 and Windows 8 machines, you can boot from USB differently. We have a little detail on that later. The very first time I boot on a machine, Windows to Go goes through what we call a specialization phase. So it's looking at the hardware on the device, and it's checking for drivers to make sure that it can work appropriately. If it finds that there's something that is not on the Windows to Go drive to work appropriately, it will then go out to Windows Update and pull that down to the drive and do, again, what we call specialize for the machine that it's booted from. Now, right now, my BitLocker screen has come up, so I'm going to put my password in. And it'll come up in a minute. My machine doesn't show the pre-boot process. So as soon as I get to the lock screen, it'll show up on here. But what it's doing is going through that process. So it's going through a specialization process. The next time I move to that same machine, it'll remember that, and it'll boot just as quickly for the most part as Windows 8 would booting from the hard drive itself. So it looks like we're coming up here. Standard lock screen. So again, it looks just like Windows. I'm going to log in and put my password in here. Maybe. So passwords work just the same. Again, it's exactly Windows. I could utilize a PIN, my password. I could enforce password complexity. All of those things are fair game. Notice I get to the start screen, Windows 8. I get to my desktop here. If I pull up now the same thing here and I show my local disk, I have a lot on this one, so it's pretty full. But the Windows to Go drive that I'm using is about 32 gigabytes. So I have the image. I have the whole Office suite on here. I also have an ISO, so I could create a Windows to Go drive from here. So you see it's pretty full. But the piece to note is that the only drive that's mounted and the local disk drive here, C, is now the Windows to Go drive that I'm booted from. So again, very similarly to not showing the Windows to Go drive on a running machine, when I'm booted into Windows to Go, by default, the internal drive is offline. And group policies in the provisioning process are where it separate that capability and provide that separation between the machines here. Now, from a fidelity perspective, I like to pull up a video here. This is a Kinect video, and this isn't on Xbox One. I get a little trouble for that, but this is Xbox 360 Kinect video. This video is loaded on the USB drive itself. It's not on the local machine, and it's simply running from the Windows to Go drive using the hardware on the machine I'm plugged into. And you'll notice the fidelity of this experience. If I didn't tell you this was running from a Windows to Go drive, we'd have no idea. We'd think because of how great this is running, it's just running from the local drive. Now, the thing I like to share here is another feature called resiliency to unintended removal. I take a lot of these drives home. I'm a product manager on the Windows to Go team. So when new drives come in, I take them home and I give them a test run. I self-host them. I do boot compatibility. And I showed this demo and this feature to my boys. I have three boys at home, ranging in age 5, 9, and 13. And they've created a game with this because of this feature. So what they do is they will run by, they'll distract me. My 5-year-old will ask me for something like chocolate milk. And then my 9-year-old will run and pull my USB drive out of my machine. And you'll notice what happens. It stops and kind of locks in place right where it is. It's not going to move forward until I get this back in. So I have 60 seconds to get this drive back into my machine. And this is the game that my boys play with me. If I get it back in 60 seconds, I'm simply going to receive this message, and then I've won the game. However, if my boys keep it for longer than 60 seconds, they've won the game. Now, if my 5-year-old takes it, he's pretty slow still, I can get it back. My 9-year-old, if he gets a hold of that drive, there's absolutely no way I'm getting it back in 60 seconds. But what happens here is I plug it back in, it gives me this nice little message that says, don't do that, and then I can go on with my business. If I don't get it back in the 60 seconds, the machine will shut down, and then I will have to reboot this from start on that machine or another machine. So I can't take this drive and plug it into another USB port in 60 seconds and access data. So it's two great things there. It allows me, if it happens to fall out or my dog hits it or my kid hits it, I can plug it back in and keep going. But it also does not allow other people to take it and just use the data on it. You have to boot into it to access that data. I'm going to go ahead and close that. Pull it down here. Now I'm going to go ahead and boot this machine back down because I'm going to use it for something else later. And this is kind of the end of the experience. When I'm done working with my Windows to Go drive, I simply boot the machine back down, power it down, which is what I'm going to do here. And then once it shuts down, I would pull the drive out, and I could boot back into that machine if it was my own personal machine to do my other work. So a pretty straightforward process in terms of using it, and a good experience, high fidelity experience as well. So we'll switch back to the PowerPoint here. I'll take just a brief pause in between some of these sections as we move on. Any questions on the usability of the experience? Because we don't have microphones, I'm going to just kind of roam down here. You did a question? Okay. So the question was, in the specialization phase, Windows to Go looks at the machine, finds if it has the appropriate drivers, and then if it needs something, it goes to Windows Update. Now, if one of the drivers is a network driver, a Wi-Fi driver, which is probably one of them that we see more specifically, you can't access Windows Update because you can't get on the network to do that. So what Windows is going to do is it's going to try to use as many of the inbox drivers, class drivers. There are not networking class drivers. So there are some machines that you might need to look at inserting, and really it's the network driver, which is the specific one that we see this on. You may have to insert in the imaging process a network driver on that. Yeah. Right. You could do that, absolutely. If you needed to do something very specific, you would do it in that image creation process. The additional thing is some of those, we see that it's the Wi-Fi driver that is more specialized with some devices. The Ethernet will work on some. Now, a lot of form factors today don't have an Ethernet plug, so you might need a dongle to connect via a hardwire connection. And then it can get to update, Windows Update, to pull some of that down. Yes? For the resiliency one, that pull-out piece. So the question was, on my same machine, I showed the demo of pulling it out and putting it back in the 60 seconds. You do need to put that into the same USB port on the same machine to get that capability. If I have two USB ports on the same machine, and I pull it out of one and plug it into the other one, it will not continue. It has to go into the same USB port that you pulled it out of, unplugged it from. Yes?
What about standby hibernation? Is it available?
The what, I'm sorry?
Standby or hibernation.
So the question was, what about standby and hibernation? By default, we suggest, and we'll get into this, so we'll talk about some of the differences here. By default, we would turn off hibernation from that perspective, because the reason we would turn that off is not that it won't work with Windows to go, but if a machine goes into hibernation, an end user might not know that, and they're going to unplug that, and then they'll go to boot up on another machine or do something, might get a little odd experience there. So by default, we would turn that off. All right, so let's go ahead and keep going through. We'll have more time for questions, and I think we'll pop up more as we get through the additional things we're talking about. So some of the use cases that we see customers deploying this for. Starting on the left, the two biggest deployment cases that we see and we talk to customers about today are definitely the contractor and the BYOD scenario. And if we think about why that is, it's because some customers don't want to buy an MDM solution or a different management solution to manage BYOD or third-party devices. And end users, for the most part, don't want group policies or things pushed down or remote white things on their PC that they're using. So it's a nice scenario to provide those guys with a Windows to Go drive. And when they do work for us as an enterprise, they boot into that. And when they're done, they boot into their same machine. And contractors and BYOD, full-time employees, or vendors working for us, work exactly the same way. Now, 3 or 4 years ago, in the Windows planning phase, there's this one up here called shared PCs. And that was really why Windows to Go was initially created. There were a lot of talks with defense departments and military departments. And speaking more on the US side of this, some people, when they go in the field from a military perspective, are taking 3 or 4 PCs, which is 15 or 20 pounds of hardware in a backpack. And there's a direct correlation between people getting hurt in the field with weight in backpacks. So they thought, if we could send one device, meaning one PC to boot from, and then multiple USBs if they needed different images or different things, that could drastically reduce like 15 pounds of weight from a backpack, and then hopefully casualty numbers would be lower. That was really where this came from. We don't see as much of the shared PC usage of that today as we do. This is great for my contractors and my BYOD. The last one on the right that I like to mention here, if we think back to when Windows 8 came out, most of the people who had, I'll call it concerns, was the usability, the new UI of Windows 8. Customers may be moving from XP to 7 or just moved into 7. And what Windows to Go allows them to do in that case is to leave Windows 7 on that host machine and to provide that end user with a Windows to Go drive with Windows 8 on it for testing, for trying it, for getting used to it. And at the end of the day, if they want to move back to their Windows 7 machine, they simply boot out of the Windows to Go drive. And sometimes we want to talk about licensing, sometimes not. We're going to highlight it very, very lightly as we go through here. And if you don't want to hear licensing, go ahead and plug your ears as we talk about that. But it's a little intricate when we think about how that works across some of these scenarios. So we'll step through a couple of these specifically. Travel light, work at home, from a licensing perspective, or how do we get this? How do we use it? Pretty straightforward. The vehicle or the licensing mechanism for getting Windows to Go is through software assurance or VDA. One of those two mechanisms is the way that we get rights to use Windows to Go as an end user. In this one, the way that this works is that myself, Craig, as an enterprise user, my PC that I'm working on is covered by software assurance. So in essence, I have the ability to create 2 Windows to Go drives if I'm a primary user on a software assurance covered machine. in the office, I can only boot those on a machine covered by software assurance or VDA. But the beauty of that is when I leave the office and roam outside, I can use my Windows to Go drive on any machine that will boot Windows to Go. So when I leave the office, if I have these rights, I'm not tied to software assurance or VDA. And that's really that nice capability with roaming that users get with this. If the machine boots it and we support it, I can use it on there. The nice thing about that is from a backup, or I mentioned that try Windows to Go, you're not paying for an additional license. So my primary PC is covered by software assurance, and I create two Windows to Go drives for my use. I'm not paying an additional licensing fee for Windows on each of those Windows to Go drives. So if I wanted to create one just as a backup, and we have some people at work that do this, and in fact, I had a 7:30 meeting one time I took from home, my PC wouldn't boot, but I had my backup Windows to Go drive, and I plugged in, got into Link, and used it on my secondary, my personal device at home. There's not another licensing fee associated with that drive at that point. So it's a simple, nice way to implement that. Now the BYOD and the contractor scenario, which I mentioned is the biggest one that we see at this point, it will work the same way. The device that the employee is using or the contractor is using needs to be covered by software assurance or VDA. Now we would recommend in this one VDA as the mechanism. And the reason for that, software assurance is for the lifetime of the device. VDA has reassignment rights every 90 days. So if I have a contractor and they're going to have a 90-day assignment with me, I would cover their machine with VDA, provide them a Windows to Go drive. At the end of those 90 days, they would simply hand the Windows to Go drive back in. And when the next contractor or vendor came, I would re-image, cover their machine with VDA, and give them that Windows to Go drive. So it works better when end users are going to be moving around through their BYOD or their very own machines at that point. The last one here, and this one's interesting. I'll build the slide up. This is a shared PC scenario. So we see this in police forces where police officers share a car and a single PC, and they each have a Windows to Go drive that they boot into when they do their work on a given day, or call centers. So people who are going to roam through in call centers, they each have their Windows to Go drive, and when they're there for the day, the machine they're on, they use their personalized Windows to Go drive, as well as in education, in terms of a K-12 school, or even a post-secondary school such as colleges that have computer labs, they can give their end users a Windows to Go drive and then use the labs at work. But the way this works in enterprise scenarios is that for every software assurance covered machine, an enterprise can create two Windows to Go drives. So if I have 500 people that work in the call center and I have 250 PCs, I could create enough drives to cover that so that those call center people could use those when they come into work and work from as they roam through those PCs there. So that's an interesting one because of that 2-to-1 ratio, the ability to create two Windows to Go drives for every SA covered machine fits nicely into this scenario. So that's the extent. It's a very brief run through we typically do through these on Windows to Go. We have a mobility booth at the Windows down in the Windows Center downstairs. If you have more specific questions on those types of things, certainly come on down there and ask away. The people at the Windows to Go booth should be able to help answer any of those specific questions that you would have. Now, looking into Windows to Go versus Windows, how are they the same and how are they different? And as we move into 8.1, almost everything becomes the same. It supports BitLocker drive encryption. One thing that we had to do for Windows to Go was to add a password protector. If anybody uses BitLocker and you're familiar with how that works on a machine, it's TPM plus PIN as the pre-boot authenticator. Well, when I'm moving around machines with my Windows to Go drive, I'm not on my primary PC, and I'm not using the TPM that I typically use. So I can't do a mapping of TPM plus PIN on my Windows to Go drive. So we had to create a new password protector. In the pre-boot authentication phase now, instead of putting the PIN unlocked by TPM, we would use a password to unlock BitLocker on a Windows to Go drive. And then we can move across a whole variety of machines, still use a pre-boot authentication mechanism, and secure the Windows to Go drive. So, and again, that's because the Trusted Platform module is not used. With MDOP 2013, MBAM, Microsoft BitLocker Administration and Monitoring, now supports managing the BitLocker key process, deployment and recovery process for Windows to Go. When we launched, it didn't, but now it does. So again, just the same as it would work on Windows at this point. If you're familiar with any of the security capabilities of Windows 8, such as the trusted boot process, secure boot, those function like they do on Windows 8 as well. If you're booting from a BIOS or a UEFI machine, you know, the security differences there between those work the same on here. And everything works the same way. So my Windows to Go drive has the same security protection mechanisms that Windows 8 does as I move across machines. The early loading malware, capabilities that come across in that. Now, additionally here, we can take advantage of any other security capabilities that we want to on our normal machine as well. We just have a couple of them up here. Direct access, if anybody has direct access deployed, you can deploy direct access on Windows to Go. If you have your own VPN clients, a Cisco, a Checkpoint, a Juniper, you can deploy those on Windows to Go and use those as well. Two-factor authentication, again, it works just like Windows. So you would deploy it the same way that you would on your established PC that you're providing as well. Any of those pieces work the same way with Windows to Go as they would with Windows running from a hard drive on a primary PC. This is kind of just a follow-up to what I showed in the demo. The internal disks are offline, and just a picture of that. There was some existing SAN policies in place, which we took advantage of and include in the provisioning process and suggest to be included in the provisioning process to do this, to set this up. All of that can be controlled through group policy. There's some additional interesting things from a group policy perspective and a SAN security perspective that were implemented. We get a whole bunch of questions. If I'm booted from my Windows to Go drive, sometimes I get the question, can I plug another USB in as a storage mechanism, and can I use the other USB ports? And the answer is yes. Then I get a follow-up question that says, well, what if I don't want my Windows to Go user to be able to plug in and store on another USB drive? Could I do that? The answer is absolutely yes as well. The appropriate SAN policy would be put in place. So an end user would boot into Windows to Go, and the only place they could store data would be on that Windows to Go drive, or you could have SkyDrive Pro, you could have work folders, you could have SharePoint, something else that you could have them store that in as well, and block the other USB ports. So there's really a whole variety of things that could be done there. Question? On the Windows to Go drive itself or on the storage drive that? Yes. Yep. So the question was, it was more about the other USBs that are coming in. If I'm booted into USB, similar in Windows, can I enforce, and I'll say BitLocker to Go, because it's Microsoft encryption policies on the other storage device that I could store from, and the answer is yes. Make sure we hit it there. So booting from USB, I like to kind of pull this one up to talk about it. There's a couple ways to set up boot from USB. Windows 8 and then 8.1 moving forward is the simplest way to do it because there is the option which is shown up here. If the host machine is running Windows 8, then I can tell it, I want you to boot from USB anytime that there is a USB available to boot from. And then when I plug it in, it simply goes through that process. If it's turned off or it's not a Windows 8 machine, then we would need to go through and do a couple different things. One of the easiest ways to do it is to use the USB boot hotkey. Many of us may have seen this on our machine. It's typically F12 or F10. So the way that would work, from a booted down machine, I would have Windows to Go plugged in. When I started to power it up, I would hold down F12 hotkey, and then it would give me an option of booting from the USB drive. So on any machine that supports USB boot, there's typically a hotkey associated with that, and it'll vary from manufacturer to manufacturer. If you have, say, a bunch of machines running Windows 7, and you want to set them up to boot automatically, that's done through BIOS. So you go into the BIOS of the machine, you move USB up in the boot stack order, and then it will boot from USB each time on those other machines that are not Windows 8 as well. One note there, if you're going to change the boot order in BIOS and you're running an encryption mechanism such as BitLocker, you want to disable BitLocker before you change the boot order. So you would disable BitLocker, you would go into BIOS, you change the boot order, and then you would re-enable BitLocker. So if you're changing the boot order, you have to do that. USB hotkeys, F12, you wouldn't have to do that. Just simply something to think about if you're protecting your machines with an encryption algorithm or encryption like BitLocker or some other one. So from a fidelity perspective, and I showed this so I won't spend a lot of time on it. When you're using Windows to Go, if you don't know you have that plugged in, you're booting from it, most likely you won't know that you're using Windows to Go, just because the video runs well, everything runs well. The drives are very high performant, and if the machine that you're using on is a Windows 7 or above certified device, it supports boot from USB in a really good fashion there. If we think of peripheral support, all peripheral devices that you would use, plugging in mice, plugging in the other devices that we have class drivers for, are going to work on Windows to Go as well without any problems. If you have a touch machine, your Windows to Go will be touch, right? If it's not a touch machine, it doesn't magically provide touch to anything from that perspective. A couple things we want to mention here. The first one is Windows apps in the enterprise. So Windows Store apps from the Windows Store, the new WinRT platform. We used to call them Metro apps. We don't anymore. In Windows 8, that was disabled by default. Access to Windows Store was disabled by default. 30 seconds on why. If you use the Windows Store and you're familiar with how that works, the Windows Store limits apps to 5 machines. Windows to Go roams or could roam to a whole bunch of machines. With Windows to Go and Windows 8, if I roam to 6 or 7 machines, those new Windows apps, the Windows Store apps, would not validate, and I could not use those. That was one of the big limitations in the Windows 8 timeframe. So we turned that off by default. It was a local group policy on that machine, and you could, if you were an administrative user, turn it on. What we've done in Windows 8.1 is we've fixed that situation. So in Windows 8.1, which is the bottom here, the Windows Store is enabled by default. So in 8.1, we've pulled out and removed that local group policy object blocking the Windows Store, because now I could roam to 25 machines, 50 machines, and my Windows Store apps that I've downloaded would just work. There wouldn't be an issue there. We worked with the Windows Store team to recognize Windows to Go as a machine and not as the Mac of the PC that it was plugged into. The other thing to note, line of business applications, if you're using or loading those new Windows apps on yourself, they work no problem because they don't have a retail licensing model associated with the Windows Store. So those have always worked. But the biggest place we saw this was with the inbox apps. If you wanted to use the inbox mail app and the Windows Store was not enabled, you couldn't get updates. So if a security update came through and you wanted to use it, you wouldn't be able to update your inbox. The Microsoft provided inbox apps from that perspective. Windows 8.1, as you move to that, will work perfectly. So as we move between machines here, and again, the demo is the nicest way to do this, we have that process called specialization. And we had some questions about this, and we talked about it, so won't spend a lot of time here. But Windows to Go was created specifically to go through this new process. On each new machine, identify the hardware on the machine, figure out if I need additional drivers from Windows Update to support the new machine, and then to boot from that. Each additional time I boot on that same machine, it doesn't need to go through that process because it recognizes it, and it keeps a whole host of those in the registry, understanding which machines that it's booted from. So second time, goes through. The one thing I did want to mention, I typically mention this in the demo, the very first time an end user boots a Windows to Go drive, they go through the complete out-of-box experience if you haven't already set that up for them. So the very first time I plug a Windows to Go drive in ever, it's like booting up a new Windows PC for the first time. I personalize it, I put all of my information in there, and I get it ready to go. So that's the very first time it ever boots ever on any machine whatsoever. One of the additional things that was created to make sure that Windows to Go drives could boot across a whole bunch of different devices. Before we moved into Windows 8, machines booted used the BIOS process from a firmware perspective. Windows 8 devices use the UEFI for boot process. Now, to an end user, machines don't have a sticker on it that says, hey, I use BIOS or I use UEFI. So an end user using a Windows to Go drive really has no idea from that perspective what there is there. So for Windows to Go drives, we use the idea of a FAT32 partition, which allows a Windows to Go drive to boot across a BIOS machine, as well as a UEFI-enabled machine as well. And the end user doesn't have to know what I'm booting from and use a separate drive for each of those. So from a compatibility perspective, that was something that was done to do that. Now, there's a note down here that this doesn't solve architectural incompatibility issues. What that is that's referring to 64 or 32-bit images. So a 64-bit image is not going to boot on a 32-bit machine. If you're in that, you would want to build Windows to Go drive images with a 32-bit image and boot up and not have an incompatibility issue there. So many machines now, Windows 7 and 8, are x64. So typically, that's what I would create a drive from, because all of my machines that I'm booting on are utilizing that. It's some older machines that we see that today. Just a couple other differences, things you need to think about. Because of the size of the Windows to Go drives, they're not huge drives for the most part. One of the things that is not available by default is the Windows recovery environment on a Windows to Go drive. So what does that mean? With the Windows 8 feature, which is the reset or refresh your PC, that does not work on a Windows to Go drive. We would suggest, if you had a faulty drive, re-image that. It could take about 10 minutes, 15 minutes to re-image from that perspective. So have data, backup data, those types of things. And if you want to get back to a pristine state, you would re-image it on there. The other piece where that is applicable is if you use MDOP, the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack, and use the tool called DART, Diagnostics and Recovery Toolset, it needs WinRE to work, the WinRE environment. So DART would not function on a Windows to Go drive as well for some of the great diagnostic capabilities that it provides. Other special considerations, there was the question about Hibernate. So we have, again, Hibernate is disabled by default. We do that because an end user, when a machine hibernates, might think the PC is shut down, and they might pull out a Windows to Go drive, and then wouldn't get it back in time. They'd have to go through a whole boot process. Some of these things on here are considerations that we say are best practices. However, the end implication, there's not huge for that. Just step through these really quickly. Don't insert it into a running PC. You can do that because it's offline by default. Just simply a best practice thing that's recommended. Always shut it down. So always shut down the PC. The true end idea, we've done a lot of work to support the unintended removal, where we have 60 seconds to pull it out and put the drive back in or boot up from that. But the real idea there is that's a hard drive. And if you went into your machine when it was running and ripped a hard drive out, that would not be a great experience. And there could be some data corruption. So we've done the most we can with the Windows to Go drives to subvert that process. But that is really what you're doing. You're ripping the hard drive out. So power it down and start from powered up from that perspective. The last one on here, aside from the Windows Store and Windows 8 being disabled by default, the bottom one is what I hear the most. You know what, I'd like to have something else here. But the support line is supported on PCs certified for use with Windows 7 or Windows 8. And I'll tell you why first from that perspective. If we think of the specialization phase, where Windows to Go is going to go up to Windows Update and pull down drivers, we have to have those drivers in Windows Update for that to work appropriately. So the number one question here that I would receive is, hey, Craig, how about my Mac Air? Could I boot on my Mac Air or my Apple machine? It's not supported. Specifically for that reason, we don't carry Mac drivers in Windows Update, and we can't support it. So if you have an issue with it and you would call support and want them to troubleshoot, there's nothing they could do to help in that instance because typically it's a driver issue. If something doesn't work with Windows to Go on an Apple or a Mac machine, it's a driver issue. Because most Macs now support boot, so you'll get the drive to boot. It'll look like it's working, but you might have some keyboard mapping issues or other things that you need as well. So that's why we say it's not supported, and we go with this support statement here. The other thing I typically throw out is, if that's a huge blocker, and this is what we tell customers, I like to document that. In the United States, the Mac, in terms of a BYOD or a contractor issue, is not as big. It's typically our international customers and throughout Europe, where when we're talking about Windows to Go, we hear a lot more, you know, a bigger portion of my workforce in a BYOD environment is using a Mac device. Can you support it? So, you know, if you have that, would certainly like to hear afterwards if that's a big blocker, because we like to document it and see what we can do, what we could do to support that scenario. So Windows to Go drives, these drives themselves, we go through a pretty good certification process. And I worked down in the booth a little bit too, and talking to customers, this is one of the biggest areas that I think is just misunderstood in terms of what I could use. We go through a pretty rigorous process, and our partners who create certified drives do as well. They have to go through performance testing to make sure that read writes, all of the performance pieces of this drive, work just as good as an internal SSD so that Windows works well, my videos work, and I have a high fidelity experience. The next step is what a certified drive partner has to put some investment into. They would send us a whole bunch of these drives, and we would take them through a boot compatibility test and additional performance tests in labs in Redmond. And we would boot these across 100 or more machines. And we would make sure that it boots on all of those machines. And if it doesn't, then we would work with the partner to figure out what do we need to do to support that. It's typically one of two things. It might be an OEM issue. So if I have a PC, that OEM provider may have implemented boot, not exactly, or USB boot, not exactly the way they should have. And sometimes we have to work with the manufacturer. Sometimes it's the drive itself. But that's an investment that the certified drive partners have put in to make sure that when you buy one of these, you'll get a really good experience. The last one is a warranty piece. They warranty support from an enterprise level perspective what we would require on the drive piece. So always get the question, could I create Windows to Go on a non-certified drive? Some drives will allow you to put it on there. The end result is that the experience is not going to be optimal. And what I mean by that is, if it's not a certified drive, it might boot on machine A, but machine B it might not boot on. Or if it does boot, the performance could be really slow. And it's just not a great experience from that perspective. So we have a few partners that have these. They're up here. TechNet, if you're familiar with Microsoft TechNet page, we have a Windows to Go page which lists all of these drives and links to those. I will make one note. We have one up there, IronKey. IronKey is one of our partners that is here on the expo floor. They have a booth. So if you're interested in talking with one of those vendors specifically about capabilities that they bring to the table, they can talk to you about that. Most of these drives are flash drives built, or they start about 32 gigabytes. The My Passport down in the bottom is an interesting one. It's a spinning drive, very high capacity, 500 gigabytes. It meets all of the performance requirements of a Windows to Go drive. So that's one of the differentiators there. IronKey, who I mentioned who is here, and Spyrus have drives that provide some additional functionality, such as device encryption or remote kill capabilities that we don't provide internally through Microsoft. So a little bit of variety there. There are quite a few other vendors that are interested in submitting performance things for these drives to try to get more certified drives as well. Do you have a question?
Mm-hmm.
So if you use the My Passport, can you implement a boot menu for using it for multiple purposes, like a storage? You cannot on that. The My Passport drive, I know it's big capacity, but once you've locked it into being a Windows to Go drive, it needs to be a Windows to Go drive. You can't use it as a storage device separate from Windows to Go today. It would only be for Windows to Go purposes, and you could store a lot of data on it when you're using Windows to Go, but you couldn't partition it separately and use it as multiple things. Oh, you can use it across multiple PCs. So if you want to have multiple users? Single machine. Yeah, so single image on that. You could use multi-users like you could in Windows 8. So you can have multiple users that have specialized multiple accounts utilizing the same image. But what that does is it works on Windows 8 as well. You would have multiple accounts on there and a different user could log in, or you could have a user log in with two separate accounts with separate settings and apps and those types of things. But you couldn't put multiple images. I had a question here in the back. I'm going to get my exercise today without microphones in here. Okay, good question. Activation considerations for Windows to Go because you're roaming across multiple machines. I can't think if we have a bullet point on that. What we support for Windows to Go activation is AD-based or KMS-based activation. And the reason we do that is you could activate a Windows to Go drive with a Mac key. We don't support it because the way that Mac activation works is as you roam between PCs, you have to insert a key every time. KMS works differently. It's activated and it checks back in every 90 days or 6 months, I can't remember which one. As long as you're connected to your network every that time frame with KMS activation on Windows to Go, you don't have to activate it on every machine that you roam to. So that's how we support roaming across a whole bunch of machines and still being genuine. All right, so we'll build this one up quickly and then I'm going to move to a machine and kind of show some of this. This is where we'll kind of start into provisioning and deployment capabilities and what we would suggest. Inbox in Windows 8 is this creator tool. And what this allows us really to do, and we really say this is for evaluation in general, because with this you create one drive at a time. It's good for testing. And I guess let me ask this one. How many of you let your users on your PCs be admin users or have admin rights for all users on your machines? Okay, a few people, not in general. To use this tool, you have to have admin rights on a machine, which is part of why we say that as well. But what the evaluation tool does is if you have an image and you have a drive, you can create a Windows to go drive. Most companies, and we saw with the show of hands here, you know, have a standard user, which couldn't do this anyway. But let me step you through kind of how this works. Very quickly, we'll show it up here. I have a WIM or an ISO file on my machine. I have a Windows to go drive inserted. I would simply click through a few steps. I could enable BitLocker. And then after about 10 or 15 minutes, out pops a Windows to go drive that I could boot through the very first time and be ready to go. Couple considerations here, depending on how this is done and why we say evaluation. The BitLocker key would be stored locally. If you use MBAM, it would get pulled in at a later date, but you would have to work how I'm getting my BitLocker keys from the local machine, either into AD or into my MBAM store process. So there's a couple other ways we suggest more broadly deploying this. Let me pull this machine up here. And we'll show how it works here in just a second. So we'll switch over. This was the same machine that I showed Windows to go on, but I've booted back into my normal work PC environment at this time. If I want to get to that creator tool, from the start screen, I can just start typing Windows to go. And this is a setting. So I would click settings. And then I have two options here. The top one is what I would want to use Windows to go. The change Windows to go startup options would be turning my PC to automatically boot every time. So I'll click on the Windows to go. And you'll see here what comes up is that creator tool. Now it's asking me for a couple things here. The first is it tells me I can't find a USB connected device. So what I'll do is I'll take a device and I'll plug it into the USB port. And because I put that in there, it recognized it on my Windows to Go creator tool. Now the thing I like to show here is this is not a certified drive. Right now I just plugged in, and I even plugged in a really small USB drive. And when I clicked on it, it gave me an error message that says that drive's too small. All certified drives are 32 gigabytes or larger. So this would let us know, first, we're not using a certified drive. Now if this drive didn't report as fixed, as a fixed drive, it wouldn't even show up here at all. All certified drives show up as fixed. So let me, we'll take that one back out. And now this time I plugged in a regular drive or a certified drive, and you'll note that sure enough, if I click on that, this is one of our certified drives, and it doesn't give me any messages down here. It's going to let me proceed. The next thing, if I click through, it would ask me for an ISO image on here. I don't have one mounted, but if I had one mounted, or I could point to a WIM file, I could take the next step and move through here and start creating a drive. But again, this is a single evaluation process that you want to do if you're creating a drive for testing purposes only. This wouldn't be great for mass duplication capabilities here. So let's switch back and we'll look back to the next capability here, what we would suggest if we really want to deploy this at enterprise levels in a corporation. So there are a few deployment scenarios that we would look at and things we thought about for Windows to Go. Two different methods. First would be if you're going to provision these for deployment centrally. And you could do that a couple ways, and we'll show this process in just a minute. You could use PowerShell scripting process that we've documented up on TechNet. You could use that on a single drive. You could use that with a hub and specialize that across up to a maximum of 12 drives on a PC. 12 drives is about the upper limit of local drives or drives that a device will support for provisioning. In this process, central IT would provision these drives, specialize them, do BitLocker, set them up for our end users, and provide them one-to-one to end users as appropriate to the people that we wanted to have those. If you're looking to more broadly deploy it, and this is what we see from the majority of customers today, System Center 2012 Configuration Manager SP1 supports what we call self-service provisioning for end users. And I have a few screens we'll show that process. But in essence, IT sets up the task sequence, the whole process, to get it ready to go. And then an end user would go into their app catalog, click on Windows to Go, and provision it on their machine based on how IT said they could do it. So that's a nice broader deployment model, and we don't have to do all of those internally. Plain vanilla, you could also use a duplicator. So if you were going to allow an end user to do everything on their drive, you could create one Windows to Go drive, plug it into even like a 1,000 USB duplicator, and duplicate 1,000 of them at a time and hand them out as well. So there are options, and it really depends on how am I going to distribute these, the skill of the end user to specialize or to do BitLocker, those types of things, to which method we would want to use in our enterprise. So let's take a look at one of these here. The IT provisioning for the central deployment, and we talked about quite a bit of this as well, there is a script to use for this. The script that's up there works very well on Windows 8 machines. We'll update that for 8.1 machines. There is also a script if you want to use these PowerShell commands on a Windows 7 device to create these as well. So that was something we took a step back and had a request to create and went through the process to do. So the experience here, highlight that really quickly, IT goes through all that process. Then the end user here, right, what's the end user process here? They would receive the drive, and they would first boot that drive on their PC. Depending on the extent of the PowerShell scripts that you use, an end user, if you're using the dejoin, the offline domain join capabilities and direct access on the Windows to Go drive, you could mail a drive to an end user, and they could boot the first time from home, do domain join, say BitLocker keys, and be ready to go. Depends on the extent of what you want to do there, and then be ready to go. So let's take a look at what that looks like. So what I have, we have a nice kind of walkthrough script here that we'll click through. This is using the PowerShell script that is up on TechNet. It's just a nice click-through process, so we don't have to do a lot of work as we go through. But you'll see up there, this one is just configuring a single PC here. We will do the domain join. We will turn on BitLocker and save the keys in an unattend file for this one. So what I'm going to do is simply click here. And if we haven't timed out in just a second, there we go. So if you remember on the evaluation tool, the first step was to plug in a Windows to Go drive. So I'm going to go ahead and insert that. It's prompting me here to do this. I'm going to put it in, move us to the next one. It'll search my machine, and it's going to then find if I have one of these drives put in here. Note it did it, and just like the creator tool, it told me which Windows to Go drive I have. This one is a Super Talent RC4 device. So the next step, very similar to the creator tool, it's going to ask me, do you want to go through with this? Because I'm going to wipe everything that's on this drive. So I simply have to put a yes in here and say, yep, this is what I want to do. It'll take just a minute to prep and get ready for that. And then we're going to be able to go here. So the next step is that it's going to initialize, format, start to configure. This will take just a second. But if you think of that creator tool process I use you, the time frames that we're seeing here are very similar. So this should take just a few seconds here, and then it's going to come back here, and it's going to say, all right, let's go on to the next step, and we'll be ready to go. If you're using this scripting process, you're not going to see all of these steps. And this is because we have the walkthrough to see what the steps are. You would start the command running from the beginning, and it would go through and provision. And unless there was an error, it would wrap up and have the Windows to Go drive kicked out on the backside. So this is the enable BitLocker. So we're going to go ahead and enable that. It'll take just a second to click through. Okay. We show on here, which obviously we wouldn't want to show in general, our BitLocker recovery key. So it's showing us here in this process and getting us ready to go here. This next step is going to be what's going to take the amount of time. So we'll flip off of this in just a second. But this is DISM. So this is the deployment imaging service, which is kicking off here and starting the process of getting the drives ready to go. This, depending on the drive and depending on the size of the image, is going to take 6, 10 minutes, could take 15 minutes. It kind of depends from that perspective. So I'm going to put this on the side burner here in just a second and let it kind of go ahead and do its work here. I'll keep an eye on it, and we'll come back when it's finished and show the wrapped up process here and the other couple of clicks that we need to get through at that point. But again, that's simply the PowerShell scripting process. That's what's working behind the scenes of the creator tool, the PowerShell scripts, to get all this ready to go. I could have a hub connected to that as well, and using the parallel capabilities of PowerShell, do multiple, up to about 12 drives at the same time if I wanted to step through that process. And that's what we just mentioned here. USB duplicator or PowerShell plus hub. Now, if we look at the system center side of this, and this is what we would use at Microsoft, this is what most enterprises would look to do today in terms of provisioning the Windows to Go drives. The IT admin experience of that is very similar to the way that you would use System Center to set up provisioning of a PC. Task sequences, all the steps, very similar. What we worked with System Center on was to take the creator tool, which is Inbox with Windows 8, and bring that in or migrate that into System Center. So it uses the same capabilities to do that. To the end user, this is really nice. I send an email to my end user and let them know, you can now create a Windows to Go drive. They would go up to their application, their app catalog, very similar to getting Adobe or anything else we would allow them to download from System Center. And they'd see Windows to Go there. And they'd click on it and kick off this process. So this is not a demo, and I want to be very specific. It's not a demo. It's just some screenshots that we have here. I find sometimes that anytime I bring a server along for demos, things happen in a not really good fashion. Things break. So I'm just going to step through a couple of the processes here and then show you the end user perspective of that as we're waiting for our drive to provision over here as well. So this is showing the task sequence editor in ConfigMan. And what you'll see here are all the steps and the processes that I would go through in setting up this process to get Windows to Go ready for my end users here. Very similar steps that, you know, everybody's familiar with. The BitLocker piece here, the same thing we did to support Windows to Go, meaning the password protector, we also had to tell System Center to allow a password protector for BitLocker versus TPM plus PIN. So that was one difference that was pulled in here to support this as well.
But all of the required steps here would be set up very similarly if you guys use System Center ConfigMan as you would if you were provisioning PCs or using it for deployment processes for PCs as well. You would then go through, and again, step through all of these different things, and you can see some of the steps, the different places that we've pointed things to for the distribution points, all of those things. We'd set that up again very similarly as we would for an app that would sit in the app catalog or other things from this perspective. And this is just the summary page once we've set through all these pieces here. The boot image, selected the package. If we had drivers that we wanted to insert, specific driver, if there was a network driver from a question over here, we could get that ready to go as part of this image. We could do that on a per user basis. We could just include it in the stock image. All that great functionality that's good with System Center is here for this as well. Now, this is the additional step. So if you were publishing an app or doing something not Windows to Go related, this is one of the places where it would differ if we were doing this for Windows to Go. So these are the creator properties. This is bringing in the Windows to Go creation process into System Center here. So you see the command line, the WTG creator.exe there. So kind of right in the center there, here's my mouse, you see it there, but this kind of area right here, that's specific to Windows to Go. The executable file is the creator itself. Then we have the pre-stage WIM, and then we see that slash enable boot. If we want to set up a Windows 8 machine to boot from USB automatically, you could put that switch in there, the enable boot from USB, and once the drive is provisioned through System Center, it would set up the host machine to automatically do that. Now, you might not want to include that if your end users aren't using Windows 8, so it's an option which is available there at this point to do. From here, we would assign these to users that could do it, and then this is what the end user would see in this process. What you'll note up here is this is my app catalog as an employee of this place. So I have apps that are up there that I could choose to download, such as Adobe, if that was something that was for me. But I have Windows to Go Creator as well as a capability. So the process is Craig Ashley would get here, I'd click on this, and then it would step through the creation process here. Application has started. See, I thought I had one more in here. Yep. And then this would pop up on my screen, and it would start stepping me through this process. It would tell me to put in a USB drive, which I would do. It would recognize it, and it would step me through the steps of creating that. I could just put that on in the background and go about my business while this drive was being created as well. This doesn't have to stay up and use all of my compute processes. So I could kick this off. I could go back to email, do whatever. But from a distribution perspective in the enterprise space, this is really a great tool for doing that. One difference here between the provisioning scripts and the SCCM piece. Using System Center, I would have to boot this if I'm doing domain join for the first time on my corporate network. System Center does not push down the offline domain join policies to be able to have someone sit at home and start this process and domain join it. The PowerShell scripting does do that. So you just have to think how is this going to work? First boot to domain join, if I'm going to do that, for System Center has to happen on net, plugged into my corporate network. My image is deploying very slowly here, using the provisioning scripts for some reason today, I don't know what. I don't know if we'll see the wrap-up of that because we're at about 5 minutes here. But from a manageability perspective, you would manage a Windows to Go drive just like you would a PC at this point. System Center, just like provisioning, will also manage. You can inventory software applications, the drive itself. But 2012 SP1 is going to recognize the Windows to Go drive as a machine for that user, which is a nice functionality. All of the other group policy things, everything you're going to use to manage a Windows device, a PC, is going to work on Windows to go just like it does. So you can manage it, provision it using a lot of the same tools and the capabilities that you use today. So kind of a big build up here as a general wrap up. Some of the things that we talked about, and I apologize on the provisioning script, it's going slow here. I don't think we'll see the finished piece, but how does it work? We create it and deploy it using the capabilities we talked about. System Center is a great way to manage the ongoing capabilities there. You can use some existing tools to manage ongoing as well. We talked about the KMS or AD-based activation and why that is good for it. But the great capabilities with Windows to Go is then the end user has it, can boot it, BYOD, other situations across a whole variety of devices here to support that. So some of this related content I don't think was lined up again for the titles here, but there are other sessions that have some Windows to Go related pieces in here, and I apologize, I don't think we got the new ones for here. But if you have questions or want to see us, I'll be at the mobility booth quite a bit of the week. We'll be at the Ask the Expert nights as well, so swing by and ask questions for all those types of things. Before we move into a Q&A here, I just wanted to note, please make sure that you fill out your evaluations for these and that you're ready to go. And then I'm going to toss out a few drives. I apologize, I don't have them for everybody here. So get ready to catch them. I'm just going to toss them up as I roam around here. I was in a session where I provided these to someone. They were beating them out there. I think someone ended up bruised or something. But we'll just toss a few around here. And if you have questions, feel free, please, to ask. Yes. Yep. So you would need to be an admin user. Well, for the app catalog piece or an end user, you would not need to be that. For that, from that perspective. So I apologize. I know I certainly won't get to everybody here from this perspective. So any questions here as we're roaming around? And I'm out, I apologize. So we didn't have enough for everybody. Actually, I'm sorry, I do have one more here. So questions? Sure. So the question was backup, you know, for that perspective. So absolutely, we would suggest that you use a backup mechanism. You could use folder redirection. You could use work folders. You could use SharePoint, SkyDrive Pro. But absolutely, I mean, you could use a hard disk as a backup, you know, another one. But you would certainly want to back up your data just like you would on a normal PC. Oh, okay. So then the question was not just the data, but the other things as well. Everything that works on a Windows PC, like UEV, like integration with your data and your applications, if you would use AppV, folder redirection, SkyDrive Pro, any of those things, we would suggest that you use with Windows to Go as well, so that if you happen to lose your specialized Windows to Go drive, it would be very easy to plug it back in, log in on your domain, and have the apps provisioned, have your settings roam utilizing UEV, have the data sitting in the right location. So all of those same things that you would want to do or suggest for a PC, you would certainly want to do for Windows to Go as well. Form factor, you know, losing a USB is obviously much easier than losing your PC itself. Yes? Sure, run around here.
You want to run like manage machine names, mm-hmm. and go to reassign machine name and asset and the event models and all the inventory. So how would you discuss that when you create a USB drives?
Yeah. Yep. So the process, the question was about machine names, specific machine names and tracking. You can do that through System Center and the provisioning script process. If you're handing out a specialized drive from that perspective. If you use just plain duplication or the creator tool, you can't force that type of thing. So you would want to use the scripting process or System Center if you want to manage and drive the naming of those capabilities. Sure.
It's about performance and highest spec applications.
Okay. Yeah, so the question was high-performance applications and support from vendors, those types of things. Because the drives are we go through such high specifications for the drives themselves to be very high-performance, most applications, high-performance applications, run well on those drives as well. If you have a drive that's big enough, so you might need a little bit larger drive, you might need to start at a 64 gig to make sure you have space for some of those applications. And then you need to make sure that the machine you're plugged into would have the right specifications, the right RAM, all of those things to work as well. But for the most part, and the only thing you'd want to think about there is you would want to have most likely the USB plugged into a 3.0 port. So you would have a USB 3.0 drive that's high performant, USB 3.0 port, and then a machine that could support the application as well. And then if you had questions or something happen, if you're using the certified drive, you know, certainly Microsoft would work with you if you saw something, right? If something didn't work as intended, you know, we could work with you on that. Yeah, you bet. I think we're getting close to the end of the time here. Yeah, so the question was, what's the performance like on a USB 2 port? The demo that I showed with the Kinect video was a certified drive running on my 2.0 port on my machine. So that video, the Kinect video, was the certified drive on a 2.0 port. So the performance is pretty good even on a 2.0 port. I don't see a lot of difference myself as a daily user of it between the two. But moving forward or a high performance application, you could see some variance there from that perspective. All right, well, thank you very much. Certainly appreciate your time here this morning.